Good morning. It's 5:11. Want to hear something crazy? My daughter was with us over the weekend, and she went back to school yesterday in the late afternoon. So when I got home from work yesterday, I decided to take a short nap right after lunch so I could be awake and spend some time with her before she went back later in the day to school. So I said, I'm going upstairs for a nap. I'll just try to sleep for like maybe an hour and 15 minutes or something, and then I'll come back downstairs so we can spend some time together before you leave. So I go upstairs and I lie down. Or do I lay down? I lie down, I think.
I think you lie down, yeah.
You got it.
Yeah. That always stumps me. So I go upstairs and lie down. I look at the clock, and I think, okay, now, Bob, make sure, like, in an hour or so, you're up. And usually when I set my mental alarm clock, it works. So I fall asleep really quickly, and then I wake up, and I think, wow. Did you ever have one of those naps where you think, wow, I mean, it seems like I just went to sleep, and I look at the clock, and I think, well, it's time to go back downstairs. I've been sleeping for an hour, so I go back downstairs, and my daughter says to me, how come you didn't take a nap? And I said, well, what do you mean? And she said, you've been sleeping for 5 minutes.
Wow.
So what happened was when I woke up, I was convinced I was asleep for an hour, but I said to myself, man, it's like I was sleeping for 5 minutes. I can't believe an hour has passed. Well, I misread the clock, so I actually did only sleep for like 5 minutes, and then I felt like I slept for an hour, though, kind of.
That's,
I mean,
a
after
power
I got
nap.
Up, well, it's like,
that's what a power nap is.
That's an ultimate power nap.
Pretty soon you'll be able to do that standing up.
Those are the best. If I sleep 10 minutes in the car sometime, I am like, boom.
Yeah, I felt good.
Great.
It was like I felt like I convinced myself that I had slept an hour, so my body reacted that way. But then later in the day and in the evening, like I went to sleep early last night, but I don't feel like I got enough sleep. I was all messed up because the nap was too short is what I'm saying. Isn't that crazy? I mean...
But you survived.
Yeah, I survived. I'm here.
You got to spend more time with your daughter.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
she was
I did.
Probably looking... Maybe she was looking forward to going to sleep for an hour.
No, she's still laughing about it.
That's funny.
But I swear, when I looked at the clock, and I was thinking, I can't believe I've been sleeping for an hour. Well, I wasn't sleeping for an hour, but I just misread the clock. And then I did feel kind of rested, though. I did feel rested. It's mind over matter or something like that, you know. But then when I got up this morning, and I went to bed really early for me. It's like, you know, I went to bed like 9 o'clock. That's really early for me. And normally, if I go to bed that early, I feel pretty good when I got up. I felt really groggy this morning because I missed my nap. Anyway, first caller of the day wins a prize, as always. We'll get to that shortly. 312-981-7200. Here's Courtney Guzman right now from WGN-TV. And the headline sort of wakes you up that the Boy Scouts file for bankruptcy. Good morning, Courtney.
Hey, Bob. Good morning. Yeah, they filed for bankruptcy yesterday in Wilmington, Delaware, Chapter 11 in federal court. This bankruptcy is expected to be one of the biggest and most complex to date, and that's mainly because as of January, Boy Scouts have identified well over 12,000 abuse victims in its 110-year history, and many of these grown men are now filing civil lawsuits against the Boy Scouts of America for sexual abuse at the hands of scoutmasters and adult leadership. And so this bankruptcy is expected to stave off those lawsuits for the time being as the organization begins to sell a good amount of its property. We're talking about buildings, campgrounds, hiking trails, all of that. And the money is going to be redirected to a trust fund for victim compensation, estimated to top $1 billion. Now, there was a letter that went out to parents of Boy Scouts last night. It explained this bankruptcy and why it was filed and why they're doing it. It came from the executive leadership team of the Boy Scouts of America, and it cites that 90% of abuse claims filed against the Boy Scouts of America date back 30 years or more. It assured parents that despite this filing, local Boy Scout activities and meetings will go on as planned. But, you know, Boy Scouts, they've been dealing with a decline in membership, a steady decline in membership. They're now down to below 2 million. And at its peak, it was over 4 million several decades ago. Boy Scouts of America apologizing to its abuse victims, saying it has revamped its policies in recent years to prevent sexual abuse. So this is a pretty big story. We will be watching it for years to come as we sit outside of the local headquarters office for the Boy Scouts of America here on the Near West Side.
So they're not talking about going away altogether, but they filed for bankruptcy. That's the story, right?
Right. They do plan on restructuring. They do plan. They say, in fact, that's why they're doing this, is because they want to be around for years to come. So this is their way of being able to pay some sort of fair compensation to the thousands of abuse victims who have filed lawsuits against Boy Scouts of America. So they filed for Chapter 11, and then they began liquidating its assets and then putting that money into a trust fund so they could pay off these individual abuse victims and then restructure and still be able to operate. That's the goal.
Courtney Guzman will give you the bankruptcy badge, and thank you for the update, Courtney. WGN-TV News reporting. Have a good day.
You too. Thanks, Bob.
5:22 almost, and this is Andrew from Marengo. Hey, Andrew, you are caller number one of the day. That means you win. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. What brings you to the world early on? What day is this today? Tuesday, the 18th of February.
Making my long trip to work from Marengo to Naperville.
What do you do in Naperville?
I actually work for the Forestry Division in the Public Works Department for the city of Naperville.
And so does that mean you will be outside all day today?
Yeah, I'll be outside pretty much every day during the year. We don't really get too many days where we're inside, so we try to do as much as we can throughout the year.
Well, you'll be okay today. Uh-huh. It's not going to get really cold until tonight and tomorrow morning. So,
yeah. So tomorrow will be fun, for sure.
Yeah, will be. We'll get you a desktop indoor weather station, Andrew. Since you work outside all day, you'll want this. Brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. Appreciate hearing from you, Andrew.
Cool. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate it.
Hold on, and we'll get all of your essential info so we can get that prize to you. And have a great day outside in Naperville.
Thanks.
It's 5:23 right now. Wanted to mention this to help some friends who are participating in a really good cause. And if you'd like to support support one of Chicago's great organizations, they're holding a very special fundraiser to assist people with disabilities and veterans on Thursday, February 27th. We're talking about the Chicago Lighthouse. They're hosting their fourth annual Poker and Casino Night at Gibson's on Rush from 5:30 to 11:30 p.m. the night of the 27th. Fun-filled evening featuring Gibson's signature dinner, an open bar, premium cocktails, a Texas Hold'em poker tournament, casino games, a chance to win more than $20,000 in prizes, and there's a grand prize of $10,000, a seat to the World Series of Poker main event in Las Vegas. And if you don't know how to play poker, they're even going to have a beginner's tutorial that night. The event's totally accessible, and it's a great fun evening for a great cause. And you can find out more about it and get tickets and all the information by checking out ChicagoLighthouse.org, ChicagoLighthouse.org, or you can call 312-447-3448, 312-447-3448. It's 5:25 almost. Let's see, Dave Bennett is on the road with basketball tonight, right, Andy?
Correct. At Maryland, the 6:45 pregame, 7 o'clock tip, as the Wildcats taking on the number 7 team in the country tonight.
And he mentioned to me yesterday that he'll be back in a couple of days. What does he have the next day, or is he just playing hooky?
I think he's playing hooky, travel day, you know, one of those kind of things.
Oh, okay. All right, I get
it. One of those catch-all days. He's on assignment tomorrow.
On assignment, yes. That's what we say. And you are on assignment starting when? You're going to spring training.
Yeah, I'm going to leave you right after your show tomorrow, as a matter of fact.
Well, lucky you. Can I stow away?
Sure.
I was watching all of the reports yesterday from Arizona, Cubs and Sox, and it's all optimism at this point, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, the White Sox side of things, they welcomed in their position players yesterday for the first time. There have been a lot of guys there already who kind of beat the deadline to show up, and they're going to have their first full squad workout today. Cubs had their first one yesterday. Tom Ricketts also met with the media with the State of the Cubs address, announcing that Marquis had signed a deal with Hulu,
mm-hmm.
and also kind of defending why he didn't go out and spend a lot of money in the offseason, saying he didn't really wasn't certain that that was going to help him.
I mean, you have to kind of have a business mind to follow all of this now and figure out why people are getting traded or not getting traded, yeah. And what the luxury tax is all about. And that's what he was talking about yesterday, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he was saying that, you know, the luxury tax was not what was precluding them from doing things. So it's just it's one of those things that, you know, a gut feel for himself, I believe, and still not really being sure how much money they're going to see from the network.
And on the White Sox injury front, is it too early to be concerned about the guys who showed up with some minor problems?
Yeah. I mean, Giolito was suffering from the flu. He had a really bad case of it. He missed Sox Fest. Gio Gonzalez, an older player, you know, some of these guys take a little more time to get worked in. And it's not like if Gio Gonzalez doesn't throw a certain amount of innings during spring training, he can't be ready for a regular season. He's gone through this routine many, many times.
And the Blackhawks play again when?
They're tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night
against the... they're actually at home tomorrow night.
They're back.
Believe that or not.
Finally.
Yeah, they're taking on the Rangers.
With any hope for the playoffs?
It's getting dicey. They're 8 points out of the final wild card spot as we sit here today. And that road trip was a real good opportunity to gain some ground on some teams that they're playing in the Western Conference and also in their division, and they just didn't take advantage of it. They played pretty well, though. They weren't really blown out of any games, but they had some bad puck luck, as they like to say.
All right, more on the sports coming up as we work through the morning, and it's good to have you here with us, Andy.
You.
And think again about whether you have any extra room when you head out to Arizona.
I'll probably have some. I pack very lightly.
Okay. Time for the Agribusiness Brief with Orion.
Good morning. It's been a while since we last traded, so let me begin with a quick review of the ups and downs of the markets at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange on Friday of last week. Livestock futures, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the screen all green on Friday for hogs, cattle, and feeder cattle. But in the grain market, a different story Friday, the screen all red, except for the nearby March wheat contract. But corn and soybeans and the other wheat contracts all ended the day lower on Friday. So let's see where we'll start this four-day holiday trading week. Brazilian soybean production in the current marketing year expected to reach a record of 125.6 million tons, according to Ag Rural in Brazil. More than a fifth of the planted acreage has now been harvested, and that estimate was revised from 123.9 million bushels in January. If the current projection is achieved, Brazil, the world's largest exporter and also the largest producer of soybeans, will add more than 10 million tons to last year's production. Well, we still have several events to go through for the month of February. Next week, we'll be getting the Agricultural Outlook Forum, and we'll cover that in Washington, D.C. Also coming up before the end of the month is the Commodity Classic. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue confirmed as the keynote speaker for that event on February 27 through 29. Have a great day. That's AgBiz. I'm Orion Samuelson.
All right. Thanks, Orion. It's 5:41. Have you ever been to Plymouth Rock? Years ago, I was there, and I'll tell you a funny story about that in a second. There's a report this morning about Plymouth Rock and other sites near Plymouth, Massachusetts, covered in red graffiti yesterday during a vandalism spree at the site marking the landing of the Pilgrims in Massachusetts 400 years ago. Officials in Plymouth discovered the vandalism early in the morning. Workers had removed red spray paint Authorities say no arrests have been made. The site is open to tourists. The rock has come to symbolize the spot where William Bradford and the Mayflower Pilgrims disembarked before founding Plymouth Colony in December of 1620. Now, if you've been there in recent years, it's a very nice tourist attraction. But many, many years ago, I was there, drove a long way to see it. And when I got there, I looked down at the rock. There was a iron fence. And then I looked down at the rock, and I could barely see the rock because there was so much garbage around it. And there was actually a shopping cart there. Maybe that was the first shopping trip the pilgrims made. I'm not sure, but I don't think the shopping cart was supposed to be there. And
was there a turkey in it?
No.
Frozen?
It was empty. and it was a mess. And I guess sometime after that, they spent some money, and they cleaned it up and fixed it up. And I don't think the shopping cart's there anymore. But anyway, the site got vandalized yesterday, and hopefully they'll clean it up, and it will once again be look nice for the tourists. It's 5:43 right now. I'll never forget it. The Plymouth shopping cart. Yes,
and we can have nice things, can't we?
No, you know what? Have you anybody here ever been there? You ever been to Plymouth?
Never.
No.
No. Yeah, it's pretty. It's cool, and then they have some recreations of ships in the area and so forth. But I was really surprised when I saw it, and this is going back. Maybe 20 years ago or more. First of all, there weren't many tourists around, and I thought, this is odd. We were the only ones there. And then, of course, I didn't think the shopping cart was a nice touch. Okay, heads up in here. Pay attention, Steve in the newsroom, Mary in traffic central, or the bunker, or the traffic center, whatever it's called.
The hut.
The hut. Okay. Pens and pencils on the floor. No copying, no cheating, and Andy's in for Dave on the sports desk. All right, listen to this. WSB-TV in Atlanta, there's a traffic reporter there, Mark Arum, and he posted a few pictures, I think four or five pictures on his social media sites from fast food chains that got their start in Georgia. All of these places started there. Chick-fil-A, Waffle House, a place called American Deli, and the Varsity, which is a famous hot dog place there. And then what he did was he said, okay, people in Atlanta, which of our hometown fast food spots do you want to drop? So people started voting, because what he posted is, one has to go. If one has to go, which one would you eliminate? So now, we're not talking about places that started in Chicago here, but if you could eliminate one of the fast food places around here, which one could you do without, live without, and don't you need? Anybody want to go first?
Hmm.
What, the ad or the actual place?
No, the place,
oh,
Mary.
Yeah,
the place.
You're asking me to disown a child here. I know.
That's
heck?
Right, Steve. Vote for your least favorite.
Oh, man.
And by the way, you may want to check it's the hard. WGN sponsor
yeah,
list
sure.
before you vote.
Yeah. How about like Arby's?
Yeah, no, Arby's.
That's a good one.
Do we even have any around? I mean,
yeah, we sure.
Yeah, there are
I mean,
few.
There's a lot in Wisconsin.
You know what? I used to like Arby's. I haven't been there in years. And back in the day, I forget what I ordered there, but I used to love their sauces. They had like a white horseradish sauce, and
oh,
then
yeah.
they had a red sauce, and I would. I swear this is true. I kid a little, but I never lie. I would take the sauce, dispensers there, and on the bun, on the inside of the bun, I would make the Cubs logo on it. Even though I didn't have blue, I just had a red and white. But I would vote Arby's as well, and any fast food franchised hot dog place. There aren't that many of them,
yeah.
but whichever ones are out there, they pale in comparison to the local neighborhood hot dog joints, with the exception of Portillo's.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. Portillo's.
They do a good job. I don't count them. They're,
can't get rid of
they're
them.
Excluded.
Plus, they're from my hometown, Villa Park.
That's right.
They originated.
Dick Portillo's
mm-hmm.
little trailer started
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Are we all going with Arby's? Anybody
else? I'm
going
to go with Sonic, I think. Just because
I don't think I've ever been to a Sonic.
So that's least on my list as well. And there's one near my house that sometimes that I when I ate fast food, I've given up fast food generally, but it's too close and too dangerous. And so that's why I'd mix that one off the list.
There's too many sandwich shops. Yeah. You know what I mean? You have so much so much confusion.
Too many hamburger places.
Too many Subways. Yeah. Too many Jimmy John's. Yeah. Too many.
Jersey Mike's. You know, all that kind of stuff.
What about Qdoba or whatever?
Qdoba. That's the alternative to Chipotle.
Never been there. There's a great, if you want a submarine sandwich, you got to go to that place that's been there for a long time on Addison. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Right across from, on Western?
Near Lane Tech?
Yeah, that little hut.
That's a great place. Yeah. That's a great sort of mom-pa place. You know, Steve, you talk about passing by a fast food joint and, you know, having to use all your willpower not to go in there. I remember years and years ago, and there aren't too many Jack-in-the-Boxes around here anymore.
No. They're
out west. Yeah. But there was a Jack-in-the-Box on my way home. And when I first started over there at the Big 89, I was working for 2 months, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. And so I'd be driving home, and Jack-in-the-Box was open all night. And so at about 2:30 a.m., I'd be driving by the Jack-in-the-Box. And the conversation in my head was, you need something in there. No, don't do it. Yes, no,
Jack's,
yes, no.
Jack's siren song.
And most of the time I went in there, and then, of course, you know, regretted it in the morning, you know, eating a Jack-in-the-Box at 3 in the morning. But anyway, well, I don't know. We'll see how the votes turn out in Atlanta there for that traffic reporter's poll. Chick-fil-A, Waffle House, American Deli, and the Varsity. Those are the only ones he listed because those are the ones that started in Atlanta. And he wanted to know, which one would you drop?
You may rethink your Arby's decision, guys, because it's, yesterday we reported they're coming out with this new fish sandwich.
I heard about
this.
And
I saw the picture of this thing yesterday. It's giant, and it looks delicious. So you might want to rethink
No.
it. Wait till after Lent.
I can't wait to tell my wife, hey, honey, you know what? You know what would be great? Let's get some fish tonight from Arby's for dinner. that's going to go over really well.
My daughter used to order a ham and cheese without the cheese from Arby's.
Really?
Because she hates cheese. So she'd order a ham and
cheese. I order a Philly cheesesteak without the cheese. That's not so bad. I did have that famous Popeye's chicken sandwich that everybody's talking about that they're lining up for. Yeah. I'm trying to remember, did I have the spicy one or the regular one? I think they both have a kick. A very plump, very juicy, very good chicken sandwich at Popeye's, although Mrs. Surratt claims it's pumped full of chemicals, which is why I enjoyed it so much. Oh, well, there you go. There's our little breakfast report this morning. Did Don McNeil ever do this on The Breakfast Club? I don't know. You want to get in touch with us, here's the way to do it. Phone number and text is the same. It is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And you can email us, bobshow@wgnradio.com. It's not Bob's show. There's a BS in the middle of that. bobshow@wgnradio.com. Got it? Okay. We'll go through our top six stories at six, the six items that people are talking about this morning. We'll do that at about 6:18 today. Right now, let's get Steve Grzanich in the newsroom with a look ahead at markets today. Steve?
The Market Desk Outlook, sponsored by Associated Bank, the National Association of Home Builders Housing Market Index for February, comes out this morning. Housing industry analysts see the index remaining unchanged from last month. That we'll see that reported about 9 o'clock Chicago time today. Also, the Empire State Manufacturing Index is out in Europe, some German economic sentiment figures come out that could impact the market day that's underway already in Europe. We get some earnings today as well. Walmart is already out of the box. Disappointing earnings today. HSBC, Glencore, Dutch Telecom, other companies reporting earnings today outside of Walmart will do so after the bell today. Just a few things that could move the markets on this Tuesday, February the 18th.
It's 6:09. Did you walk the dog yet today? There's a new study out. The headline is, dog owners take more pictures of their pet than their spouses. There were some interesting findings in this study. 65% of dog owners admitted to snapping more photos of their dog than their significant other. The report surveyed thousands of dog owners trying to get into their minds, and the findings included the fact that dog owners are redefining their relationship with their pets through, quote, an increased regard for the feelings and dignity of their pets, end quote. Here are some of the findings. These are interesting. 54% of dog owners would consider ending a relationship if their dog didn't like their partner.
Okay.
24% of pet parents make up songs to sing to their dogs. 1 in 4 pet parents have brought their pet on a date. 47% of those with a significant other find it harder to leave their dog for a week than their human partner. Well, you know, it's the unconditional love, right? I mean, you're not going to get any pushback from your pet, are you? And by the way, I am a dog and a cat person, so don't knock cats around me, all right? If you don't like cats, you just don't understand them. But I do like dogs.
The dog has a way of deciding things that I always trust completely. Mm-hmm. If a dog doesn't like you, I probably won't like you either. So sure. I always trust my dog.
Yeah. That's a good rule, Steve. 56% of dog people say hello to their dog first when they come home before greeting the rest of the family. Well, yep. Because your dog's going to greet you first,
yeah, right? Right.
Mm-hmm. This organization website, I guess, did the survey, Rover.com. According to them, there are 54 million households in the country with at least one dog.
You know, how many studies have you seen where they say dogs help people become healthy and stay healthy? I've never seen one about a spouse.
Watch it.
Alerts when they're sick. My grand dog just saved my grandbaby, actually. She was sick, and she was sleeping on her back, and she started getting sick, you know, vomiting, mm-hmm. and she almost choked, and the dog kept bugging my son and daughter-in-law, who were watching TV, and, you know, kept bugging him, and making him go upstairs to look at the baby, and they finally went up, and the baby was sick. Yeah.
You hear stories like that all the time. And it's a scientific fact, I think, that your pet will lower your blood pressure. It has a calming effect on you. And, you know, they're never moody, are they? Oh, cats are a little moody, but just, again, you got to understand them. And people always talk about cats not being as smart as dogs. No, that is not true.
They're too smart for their own good.
That's right. That's why, you know, you throw a ball around and the dog's going to go get it like 100 times. You throw a ball around to a cat and the cat looks at you like, what? What?
I'm not doing it.
Yeah, although I did have a cat once that fetched, and it would retrieve a little stuffed toy and bring it back and drop it in my shoe. And it's not like I taught the cat that. The cat just did that because cats are smarter than dogs.
But they're also scarier.
If you don't understand them,
I know,
them,
I don't get them. I just don't.
I don't understand them either.
I can't figure them out. They don't like me, and I just like, yikes.
Again, I love cats and dogs, but I grew up in an apartment, so I had cats all the time. It was a lot easier than having a dog. But I do understand both, and cats are smarter. It's 6:14. And after all, how smart can a dog be? I mean, you know, the thing is happy drinking out of your toilet. I rest my case.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, everyone.
Now the top 6 at 6 with Bob Saras on WGN Radio.
At 6:18, here we go. The coronavirus is deadlier than the flu. That's the latest statement, according to a new analysis from the Chinese Center for Disease Control and Prevention. That study found a fatality rate of 2.3% in China as of last week. The later figures suggest the rate has increased. Here in the U.S., flu fatality rates hover around 0.1%. Two planes carrying hundreds of Americans taken off on a quarantined cruise ship in Japan arrived in the U.S. at military bases overnight, and the first touchdown at Travis Air Force Base in California. The other landed several hours later in Texas.
Now, page two.
Michael Bloomberg is set to appear for the first time at a Democratic presidential debate, based on a poll released this morning that showed him with the requisite support. And this should increase the ratings for that debate. Bloomberg had failed to qualify for past debates, in part because the Democratic National Committee had set a threshold for campaign contributions, which he is not accepting.
Page three.
Authorities confiscated weapons and ammunition from a car at the United Center on Sunday before the start of the NBA All-Star Game. A 2019 black Yukon drove into the loading dock checkpoint area of the arena around 6:45 p.m. and stopped to be checked out by a bomb-sniffing dog before dropping off its passengers. According to Chicago police, the canine detected a possible hit and warranted further investigation. Passengers were told to remain inside the car, but they grabbed their things, got out, and walked toward the United Center, saying they were part of the halftime show. The driver told investigators he didn't know who the backpack belonged to or what was inside. He had two weapons on him, but he did have a valid concealed carry license and a firearms owner identification card. No arrests were reported. Authorities were unable to determine who the guns in the backpack were registered to.
Page four.
Another bankruptcy in business. Tough times for retail. Pier One, the home goods retailer, has filed for Chapter 11. Just weeks after they announced the closure of nearly half of their 942 stores, the Texas-based retailer has been on the brink of collapse for years as competitors from Target, Walmart, Wayfair, and Bed Bath & Beyond offer lower prices and similar offerings. Here in Illinois, these stores have closed or will be closing soon. Pier 1 in Algonquin, Aurora, Batavia, Bloomingdale, Bolingbrook, Bourbonnais, Carbondale, Chicago, DeKalb, Forsyth, Glenview, Mundelein, Oak Park, Schaumburg, and South Elgin.
To whom it may concern.
And after the third tragedy in a month, the Chicago police have announced that they're working with the CTA on a very robust transit safety plan that is supposed to be announced in the coming weeks. It will include enhanced police and CTA security resources, as well as additional technology. Police sources say the department plans to add about 50 officers to trains and platforms beginning March 5th and lasting until May 27th.
Stand by for news.
All right, travelers. United Airlines has announced they will be serving Oreo Thins on all United and United Express flights as an onboard snack, replacing the Biscoff cookies. Oreo Thins, only 140 calories per four cookies, will join pretzels and the highly popular Stroop waffles as complimentary snacks starting in March. Have you had the Stroop waffles? Those are fantastic.
No. Yeah, those are good.
They stopped the serving Stroop waffles at one point, and then they had to bring it back because people were like outraged. It's a Dutch cookie. You can find it in some supermarkets. It's got a layer of caramel syrup pressed between two waffle cookies, and this is great stuff. Although, you know how tough it is to go through airports. There's something about traveling or passing by all the food places. You just want to keep eating, whether you're hungry or not. And, you know, you want to be healthy when you're traveling. And I guess Stroop waffles don't help. And Oreo Thins, yeah, right, the fewer calories than the regular Oreo. But it would be nicer to have healthier options. But I got hooked on those Stroop waffles. In fact, last time I was flying on American. And I forgot that only United had them, so I asked the flight attendant, could I have those cookies? I forgot what they were called, and I described them, and she said, oh, you mean the ones American has? So apparently they're famous. But anyway.
Do you think they'll pass out milk, too? It's tough to have Oreos without milk, you know?
That's a good idea, Joe. You know what? Milk and cookies.
Yeah.
That'd be a good marketing idea, actually.
Yeah, because otherwise you get the black teeth from the Oreos, you know?
Well, you know, as I said here yesterday, the problem, well, you got two problems now with food when you're flying. One is, you know, for a grilled cheese sandwich in the airport, it costs $28. And the other problem you have is if you take food on board, and you have to these days, you feel funny eating next to the person next to you, who oftentimes doesn't have anything to eat. Or maybe worse yet, they're having a three-course meal and you've got nothing and you're starving. So it should be sort of everybody should be eating the same thing, right?
Yeah, because the worst thing is when someone gets on the plane and it's a stinky sandwich, you know, you got something that just smells the whole cabin up, and you're thinking, oh man, I got to fly 3 hours with this thing.
I mentioned this the other day, and I don't mind giving them a free plug because he does a great job, and his food at the airport is not outrageously priced. Rick Bayless has the Frontera Grills there, I think in a couple of the terminals at O'Hare, and the food's good, and it's for airport prices, it's reasonable.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't mind giving him a free shout out here. That's where we stop oftentimes. Although, I don't know what it is, but I could eat at home, and then as soon as I get to the airport before I get on the plane, I want to get something. And I think part of it is you don't want to be completely bored sitting there, right? And the eating will pass the time nicely.
Yeah, if you're not playing on your phone or your iPad, you know, you got to eat.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, anyway, that's the update from United. And again, if you do fly United, the Stroop waffle, that's the way to go.
And that's the way it is.
This has been the Top 6 at 6 with Bob Sarat on WGN Radio.
Good day.
I did want to mention this, and Andy, I don't know if you had this in the sportscast, but the ratings for the NBA All-Star Game up 8% over last year, and in Chicago, the game recorded a 7.9 household rating. That's a 56% increase from a year ago. So, and a lot of us were thinking, well, the Bulls are struggling. There doesn't seem to be that much interest this year in basketball here because of that. But that didn't stop people from watching the Chicago NBA All-Star festivities.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, I think Chicago did itself proud, especially with a lot of the entertainers that are from here. They did a tremendous job. Common was awesome on the stage early.
Tremendous.
You know, the intro that they put together with the big cutout of the city and President Obama there and others that had joined just talking about Chicago and what it meant to them. And I thought it was cool. I think for curiosity reasons, I tuned in a little bit, too, just because I wanted to see how NBC was going to, or TNT was going to showcase Chicago. And I think that was a little curiosity that kept me around for a little bit.
The features were great.
I thought so, too.
And I got a kick out of, I think it was Phil Rosenthal in the Trib today, reviewing all of the coverage. And one of the things he said was the Chicago cut got a lot of extra publicity.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, whatever dinner they hosted or whatever they gave to Charles Barkley and company was worth it, because they kept mentioning Chicago cut. And, of course, the charities benefited greatly from the event. Let's see, $400,000 went to Team LeBron's charity, right? And let's see, and also the other charity was Chicago Matters, wasn't it?
Yes.
And they got some money too. What did they get? Like $100,000.
They got $100,000.
Yeah. After School Matters, they got $100,000, and then $400,000. Went to, what's the name of that that charity? The nonprofit. I have it here somewhere. I'll mention that in a minute. Anyway, so, and apparently everybody was happy with the new format. The players liked it. And a couple of them said, maybe there could be a little minor change, but not much, right? Did anybody have any ideas on how to make it better?
No, I think they were all pretty happy with the fact that they were playing defense. They were guys
actually
playing defense in an All-Star game. And I think the charitable arm of the situation kind of meant something to them as well, which I thought really helped them to kind of play a more straight-up game. There were guys complaining about fouls and things like that. It looked like a regular regulation NBA game on the floor there with a lot of very talented players.
Chicago Scholars will be able to expand their work of helping students get into graduate college. They got the $400,000. Yeah, it was funny because Charles Barkley on one of the pregame shows was sort of alluding to the fact that, well, you know, nobody wants to get hurt, so you're not really going full out like you are in a regular game. And they were kind of giving him the business.
Yeah. Shaq gave it to him.
Yeah.
Saying, hey,
you know, Charles, you mean you wouldn't break a sweat at the All-Star game?
He says, and that's when you start getting hurt, is when you stop playing. You got to play your normal routine so that you are in the normal way of doing things.
Right. And as the game got close to conclusion, they were all going full out. And, you know, the thing is with the athletes, I mean, they kind of, it's hard for them to go at like half speed. They don't know how to do that, do they?
No, they don't. Especially in the NBA, just the way that the ball moves in a regular game. And think about all the talented guys that are out there that have that ability to make that great pass or to make the no look and to hit the jump shot. So it was pretty cool to see.
Am I the only basketball player who still has a two-hand shot?
A little set shot?
A set. I have a two-hand set shot, yeah.
Do you call bank, too?
I haven't done that, but I do wear high tops. I watched that documentary that's running on NBC Sports Chicago about Mike Adamley. Have you seen that, Andy?
I haven't seen it, but I know what Mike is going through. And a tremendous guy, and you hate to see this, but he's trying to face it as courageously as possible. And you got to give his wife a lot of credit as well for being there and trying to assist as best she can as well.
Yeah, the Adamleys, Mike and Kim, NBC Sports Chicago, followed them around for a while. And you see the treatment, and he seems to be responding well. It's very sad what these ex-football players go through after suffering too many concussions, I guess. I mean, that's what happens. And when I was working at Channel 5, oftentimes I would ride home with Mike. There were a few times where, for whatever reason, I didn't have my car. And so, Mike went my way. So when I see him the way he is now, and I haven't seen him in a long time, and, he has moments where it's the old Mike Adamley, but then he struggles a lot. And I think of all the times I spent with him on the air and then off. And also in the newsroom there, you'd walk by Mike's desk and he'd be like doing 500 sit-ups and 500 push-ups. I mean, the guy was a rock.
Yeah.
He still is physically. So it's tough to watch it. I agreed with Phil Rosenthal's review of the documentary. There's some issues with it, but hats off to the producers over there for doing that. And Anna DeVlantis has both of them on her show, I believe, today at 1 o'clock,
nice.
A little after 1 o'clock, the Adamleys. So that's going to be a really interesting broadcast this afternoon on WGN with Anna. He's a special kind of guy, and it's a great family, and it's tough to watch. I mean, when you watch it, it's a half hour, and most of it is just following Mike through his various treatments and exercises and therapies and so forth and so on. And his wife talks about what they're going through, and it's tough to watch it. I was depressed watching it. I think, maybe because all I was thinking about was the good times I had with Mike when we were working together.
Yeah, and I remember my first time around here at WGN back in the late 90s, early 2000s. Mike was out reporting a lot, and he was doing stories, especially at Hallis Hall. And here's me, this green kid in radio here in Chicago growing up here, watching him on TV all the time, kind of, a little starstruck at time. And he was just an absolute, he was so much fun to be around.
He's the world's nicest guy.
Put his arm around you and take you in. Hey, what do you need? Anything you need? I got you covered.
Yeah. No, and what a great athlete at Northwestern and with the Bears. And not a big guy.
No, but big in stature. I'm not tall, but just a
rock.
He's solid. Yeah,
yeah.
And he's done a lot of foundation work as well. I worked with him on the DuPage County Senior Citizens Council, and we did some stuff there. And he just the nicest guy in the world. I mean, we just had fun, and super nice.
Yeah,
a lot of charity stuff.
And it's terrific that they're going public with this because it's really something that needs to be talked about. And, you need to know. And it's hard. As Kim Adamley was saying on the documentary, it's embarrassing for him. It was at first. I hope now it's not. But it's tough to come out and talk about this, and especially when you knew Well, you knew Mike as the athlete and as the TV sports anchor. So if you get a chance to watch, I'm sure they're running it quite a few times. Do I have that right? It is on NBC Sports Chicago, isn't it? Okay. Yeah, it's a story of Mike Adamly and Kim and what they're going through. And I guess they don't really know exactly the cause of this. I mean, they surmise why he's got this condition, but really it's not until they do autopsies that they really come up with the some of the answers, right?
Yeah, and that's the sad part about it, is because they learn more after an athlete passes away, and some of them self-inflicted and just things of that nature, that it's just difficult to do the day-to-day things that they took so much for granted when they were playing in younger days. But That's the sad truth, is that they learn more after someone has passed away than they do now on a guy that's still very much alive.
Yeah, tough story. More on the radio today on Anna's show. That should be really something everybody should hear. How'd you sleep last night? You want a better night's sleep? Sounds like I'm about to do a commercial, but no, I'm not. There's a new study out that says your partner's scent could lead to better sleep. For some people, sleeping next to the one they love provides comfort and security and snuggling. For others, dealing with someone's tossing and turning, not to mention snoring, can lead to sleepless nights and one or both of you waking up on the wrong side of the bed. But a new study shows that sleeping with your beloved's clothing can actually be as effective as a nighttime dose of melatonin. This comes from the University of British Columbia. According to this new study, participants who were exposed to their partner's scent overnight experienced better sleep quality, even if their partner was not actually sleeping next to them. Researchers looked at sleep data from 155 participants, each of whom were given two identical-looking T-shirts to use as a pillowcase. One of the T-shirts had been previously worn by their romantic partner, and the other had either never been worn or had been worn by a stranger, and they were not told which was which ahead of time. In order to adequately capture their unique scent, the participants' partners wore the T-shirt for 24 hours, and they were asked to refrain from using deodorant and scented body products, smoking, exercising, and eating certain foods that might affect their body odor. The shirts were then frozen to preserve their unique scent before the study. The participants then spent two straight nights sleeping with each T-shirt, filling out a survey the following morning, noting how well-rested they felt. Their sleep activity was also monitored using a special sleep watch, which tracked their movements throughout both nights. So the researcher said at the end of the study, participants guessed if the shirts they had been sleeping with had previously been worn by their partner, and it turns out the night they spent cuddled up next to their loved one's T-shirt resulted in a more restful slumber. Participants reported feeling more well-rested on the nights when they believed they were sleeping with their partner's scent. And regardless of their beliefs about scent exposure, data from the sleep watches indicated that objective sleep improved when participants were actually exposed to their partner's scent. Have to bring this study up the next time my wife says, how many nights in a row have you worn that T-shirt to bed? I'll just explain that I'm trying to help her sleep, right? Get my scent on that. The study's lead author and a graduate student in the Department of Psychology at the University of British Columbia confirmed the findings, saying, our findings provide new evidence that merely sleeping with a partner's scent improves sleep efficiency, with data showing an average sleep efficiency improvement of more than 2%. And even more surprising was this link they found, sleeping with a partner's shirt, as effective as taking melatonin. The quote here, we saw an effect similar in size to what has been reported from taking oral melatonin supplements, often used as a sleep aid. One of the most surprising findings was how a romantic partner scent could actually improve sleep quality even outside of our conscious awareness. The study's lead author said the sleep watch data showed that participants experienced less tossing and turning, when exposed to their partner's scent, even if they weren't aware of whose scent they were smelling. So there you go. It may sound strange, but previous research found that smelling a partner's scent could help relieve stress, helping to instantly lower levels of cortisol, that's the stress hormone, once you get a whiff of that familiar, unique scent you know and love so much. It seems that being able to sniff your romantic partner, even when they're not there, can promote a feeling of safety, security, and relaxation. This research will be published in Psychological Science, and they're apparently working on further exploration between the power of scent and our quality of sleep. And next, they're going to look at whether or not infants experience the same calming benefits when they're exposed to the scent of their parents at night. This is one of the strongest senses you have, one of the most powerful senses you have. You know this, right? When you can go into a building and it has a certain smell, and certain smells remind you of things, right?
Yep.
It's powerful, and apparently your partner scent could lead to better sleep, and that's what we're all about here. It's 6:54. Of course, we don't experience much sleep around here, do we?
I think I'm going to sleep with my husband's T-shirt and kick him out of the bed when he snores.
Well, yes.
How's that?
That would be perfect.
That'll work.
That's all you need. And, you know, a lot of people, we were talking about pets earlier, and a lot of people find it very comforting to sleep with their pet, right?
True.
Yeah. Bury your nose in the dog or the cat. That helps, too. Anything to lower your blood pressure, right? By the way, that NBC Sports Chicago documentary is called The Adamleys Mind Over Matter, and it is all about their struggle with CTE symptoms. And so if you check out the schedule, I'm sure they're... I saw it last night, but they're running it quite a bit. Check it out on NBC Sports Chicago. 312-981-7200, our phone number. Also, the text number. Email here is bobshow@wgnradio.com. And a footnote to our conversation about my favorite snack and your favorite snack on United Airlines, that Stroop waffle that they were serving, and then they took it off the menu, and then people, there was an outcry, and they had to bring it back. Text from 262. Bob, you forgot to mention that the directions on the Stroop waffle suggest you put the unwrapped cookie on top of your hot beverage to warm it up. You haven't had the full effect until you eat it warm. I'll have to try that. That's pretty good cold, but thanks for the tip. I appreciate that. Coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, we'll get our extremely local news report from our friends at Block Club Chicago. And Scott Kleinberg joins us after the 7:30 news this morning. He's the social media and engagement manager at Investment News. And Scott, nobody knows more about social media than Scott. He's amazing. And he's going to be talking this morning about the fact that you can't trust the news that you get on social media. And Scott's got some thoughts on that, and he'll also tell us what we can do about that and how we can figure out whether what we're getting on social media is accurate or not. So that'll be coming up this morning. Good morning. It's 7:11. I'm trying to sound more perky and chirpy like other morning radio and TV hosts. I was watching Channel 9 this morning, the news, at about 4 or 4:30. Dan Ponce and Lauren Jiggets, they're like peppy and smiley and happy and awake sounding. I'm trying.
You just want to go over and slap them, right?
Must be the makeup when they put the powder on their face. Makeup.
It could also be the bright lights shining in their face. That might do something.
That'll wake you up. Yeah.
When we were doing Fox Thing in the Morning all those years, and those days the morning TV shows didn't start like at 2 a.m. you know, like they do now. But we were on starting at 7, and I never felt right. I just got used to feeling sick. That was about it. But it does help when you you know, at the last second, you put on, you go in there, and the makeup person puts the makeup on, and then you put on your tie and everything, and it does tend to wake you up. Whereas here in radio, we can just be slobs.
Come in our pajamas.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, Mary, by the way, I have an idea for you. I have a traffic idea for you. I was thinking about this, and I don't know if this happens to other people. I'm sure it does. But you're in the car, and you're anxious to get the traffic report, and then the traffic report comes on, and then the traffic reporter signs off, and you realize you didn't hear anything. You spaced out. You were thinking of something else. So this is what I think you should try, Mary. Maybe you want to do it on your next report here in a couple of minutes. You do the traffic like you always do, and then when you sign off, and that's when people start paying attention, when you sign off, you say, okay, now that I have your attention, this is what you need to know. And then you repeat like the worst traffic jam of the moment, and then you're done.
Oh, wow. I get a lot more time then.
Well, no, you don't have to repeat the whole traffic report, but just get like the
main accident.
The most unusual mess. Yeah, the thing people need to know. Why don't you try it out here in a couple minutes, and if it works, it'll be the new format. So again, you do the traffic as you normally do, and then you sign off, and then when you sign off, you say, okay, Now that you're paying attention, did you hear? And then give the one traffic mess of the morning at that moment.
Gotcha.
That's like the worst. All right.
Can I just like ring a bell or something?
Well,
that work?
A traffic bell.
I need a traffic bell.
No, because like if you do that like at the beginning of the report, it still wouldn't work because then people, by the time you're 10 seconds into it, your mind strays.
Yeah,
it
does.
Tends to stray.
Or some traffic music I could have in the background.
Well, let's try my idea first.
All right,
and then if that doesn't work, we'll go to the bell. Okay. So
I don't have a bell, though.
All right. Now I'm going to be listening now in about 2 minutes for that, okay?
Don't fall asleep.
If you got the format down, you have any questions?
I got it.
All right, try it out. We'll see what happens.
I'm Mary Vandeveld from the IDOT Traffic Center, reminding you to drive responsibly. It's really a matter of life or death. Now, attention, everybody, listen up. Listen up.
I like it.
For the worst road report, it's going to be the inbound Eisenhower at this time, where it's jammed up from first all the way in, 52-minute travel time in from 390.
Okay, well, we'll find out if it worked and then report back to you. Thank you, Mary.
Okay. It's kind of tough with the IDOT driving responsibly, I have to do. Yeah, bring on the bell.
Okay. Time to get our extremely local news report from Block Club Chicago. Good morning, Jen Sabella. How you doing, Jen?
Good. Good morning, Bob.
Let's talk first about what's happening on the south side with the lacrosse program. And lacrosse, if people don't realize how popular lacrosse is with the kids today.
Yeah, so it's actually the Southside teams, Urban Prep in Inglewood, their Inglewood campus, and Kenwood Academy. They are the only two public school lacrosse teams on the south side of Chicago. I know they're common in Catholic schools and in some schools on the north side and in the suburbs, but these two teams are really unique. We actually got an email from one of the coaches being like, you got to check this out. We're training these kids at Kenwood from 7th and 8th grade into the high school program, and these kids had no experience with lacrosse. It was just not a common thing in their neighborhood. These are majority black teams, which the sport is only 2.8% black in Division I lacrosse as of 2018. So it's really a predominantly white sport.
Mm-hmm.
So these teams in Kenwood and Urban Prep are kind of turning that on its head. They are all in. Some of them have been actually scouted by college teams. So they might have a future in it, and they're not, competing yet against like some of the bigger lacrosse teams in the region, but they're getting there, and they actually have a match against each other. They've become kind of friendly rivals on April 14th at Kenwood.
Yeah, I really didn't realize how popular lacrosse was until a few years ago when my daughter was in high school and the kids were all talking about it. It's become, in recent years, a big deal.
I just read, I know nothing about sports ever. I was looking up, what is lacrosse?
Yeah, uh-huh.
And it's the oldest organized sport in North America, and it was played by like indigenous people here and in Canada. So it's interesting. It's kind of returning to its roots and getting a second wind.
Yeah, that's great. growing in popularity around here. It is. Cool. Now let's talk about that 18th Street CTA station mural. What's happening with that?
Yes. So if you may remember, in December and a little before that, the CTA was under a lot of criticism. They had basically painted white paint over several prominent murals in the city. There was one on the north side, but the one on the 18th Street Pink Line station in Pilsen, people were really upset about. It had been painted by Francisco Mendoza in 1998. He has since died of cancer, and he was a beloved local artist. He painted it along with Gallery 37 students and the Museum of Mexican Art. A lot of like youth came together from the community. So while they were trying to get rid of some people who had just put graffiti over the mural, they just painted it white. And people were really upset about it. Like, why didn't you just get, you know, someone to come here and restore the mural? So Alderman Byron Cincho Lopez has been vocal in wanting to fix this mural up. So they are currently welcoming anyone from the neighborhood who's interested in restoring this mural and bringing it back to life to apply. So they want people from the community, so from the Pilsen area, to apply. You can figure out, we have a link on our website, blackclubchicago.org. And yeah, you can come and bring this mural back to life. The CTA does no longer puts white paint over graffiti. They will, if it's a mural. And actually, there's now a mural database. So if there is a mural in your neighborhood and you're worried that people are tagging it and somebody might paint over it, you can just go online and on the city website and put it in this database.
You know, I always think about graffiti. Like everybody else, I hate graffiti. And when I see these murals, I always think, does this inspire graffiti artists? Or, you know, is this a good thing? You know what I'm, you know?
There's just like a very, you know, there's like a difference between people who do the murals and who are like graffiti artists.
Well, yeah.
And then the kids who just write like tags in like in the garage behind my house.
Yeah, you don't want that.
Right. And it's a lot of like territory marking for like, you know, gangs or just kids being kids.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, a lot of people who put all that time into the murals, and some of these murals are, you know, historic and, you know, could end up in an art museum someday. So you really want to restore them. So the city is actually trying to make sure they know the difference between if it looks like art, let's just take a step back and make sure before we white paint over it that it's not supposed to be there or it's supposed to be there.
I haven't heard much about the city's Graffiti Busters program since Mayor Richard M. Daley. That seemed like a really great program and was doing great work to keep our city clean. Maybe Block Club Chicago could look into that. What's happened with the Graffiti Busters? Do we still have them?
We do. Yeah, they actually were. They're actually, people were like, they need to be trained on art versus graffiti. So
oh,
there's been this like conversation happening. But it's really fascinating, and we should check in on how the mural registry is going.
Right. All right. Look forward to that. Now let's talk about the Mayfair neighborhood. And first, for people who don't know, what area of the city are we talking about here?
This is up on the northwest side, kind of near Irving Park. This old ice fact warehouse at 4300 West Montrose. There's a brand that's been around for a few years in the suburbs called Meta Wine, and they are moving into this warehouse, and they're basically going to be, they're not a traditional winery, so they're not making their own wine. They take different sourced wines and they make custom blends. So it's very much in line with, everyone wants everything custom these days. So if you want a combo of a Cabernet and a Pinot, they will be able to do that for you. And they have, you know, they've made custom blends for people's weddings, for special events, for different businesses. So they're moving into there. They're going to have kegged wine, and they're eventually going to open a tap room and restaurant and a little shop. But for now, they're just going to be, their base operations in the next 3 or 4 months are going to be in this warehouse. And people in the neighborhood are pretty excited because there's not a whole lot. It's a pretty like residential area. So they're like, hey, we have a cool little new winery on the on the block.
Is the city going to put up a sign on the northwest side, welcome to Mayfair, Chicago's wine country? Is that coming soon?
Who knows? This is going to be, there are a couple people who came to a community meeting that our reporter Alex Hernandez covered, and they said this is a trend. Like, it's actually in other countries, it's really popular, these blended wines, and it's just starting to catch on in the States. So they think that Meta is like a little bit ahead of the curve here.
Finally, we have a story about Devon Avenue, which is one of the more interesting streets in Chicago, and over the years has changed considerably. What's happening up there?
So this is a fascinating story. Our freelancer, Bob Chirito, came upon this Rohingya Cultural Center, which is at 2740 West Devon. And it turns out Rohingya Muslims, who are among the most persecuted people in the world, they have a large number of refugees. Essentially, they were stripped of their citizenship in Myanmar in the 80s, or formerly Burma, and they've been forced into camps. There's been genocide. It's been really, really awful. And they've been fleeing to different countries. And Chicago has the largest Rohingya population in the United States. And they have made home on Devon Avenue. They've come together. They're learning English. They're working to get, citizenship here. Myanmar was actually just added to President Trump's travel ban in late January. So some of the people in the neighborhood are a little worried about that, even though refugees they should be exempt from that ban. They're a little bit worried that people will be afraid to try to come to the United States. But our reporter went and saw the first Rohingya who was became a naturalized as a citizen in Chicago last week. It was really emotional. This community, I mean, he really dug into their background, and they weren't allowed to go to school. They had no access to healthcare just because they were because of their religion in Myanmar. So now they're here, and they're kind of, reuniting with people from their country, and they see Devon as like their own village in Chicago. It's a really great story, and this center is doing awesome work with literacy and preparing people for their test to become U.S. citizens.
Rohingya, who knew?
Exactly.
Thanks to Block Club Chicago, we know, and Jen Sabella with our extremely local news report this morning. Thanks, Jen.
Thanks, Bob.
All right, we'll talk to you folks tomorrow. There was an interesting survey that was released by the Pew Research Center. 18% of U.S. adults cite social media as the most common way they access political news, relying on it more than other platforms such as TV, radio, print, or news websites and apps. Scott Kleinberg is with us to break this down. And Scott, this study even united Democrats and Republicans, didn't it?
Yeah. It's a really weird thing these days, right?
Yeah, I'll say.
So this new analysis actually takes into account more than 12,000 people, which is pretty, pretty extensive. And it basically finds that all of these people are sharing all of this content on social media, which is great, but that there is a huge amount of distrust, as you said, for these platforms. And we're talking a lot. We're talking about 6 in 10 people, almost 60%, don't trust anything they see on Facebook. 48% don't trust anything they see on Twitter. And even 42% don't see things beyond photos on Instagram.
But those same people are sharing everything. They're passing it on.
And that is the problem. I mean, people look at it and they see it and they say I'm assuming it goes, they say to themselves, oh, this isn't true, but I better share it. And the thing that just drives me insane about that is I do the exact opposite. I'm always the person that takes a very close look at the content, makes sure what it is, Googles it, does all those things to make sure that it's accurate before I pass it on. But we don't have people that actually take that into account, that what they're sharing, that they're responsible for what they're sharing with their networks.
We keep hearing this, but we really have to practice this as news consumers. We have to be sharper, smarter, and better at it, don't we?
We really do, and it's like I just said, like I'm always saying, it's really our responsibility to be careful of that stuff. Because remember, if you see something in a feed from someone that you trust, and that person has shared something, you probably instantly think, okay, well, if my friend shared it, then there's no reason not to share it. And I think that's what's happening with a lot of people. People get this stuff. They're not getting this stuff just logging on and finding it from a random person. They're finding it from someone that they trust. And the people that they trust are the people that they trust to share the right information. So I think that's where the biggest disconnect is.
Right. It's surprising to me. It's amazing that more than TV, radio, newspapers, websites, and apps, the most common way that political news is accessed, and most of us get most of our political news from social media. That's amazing. Yep. Just think about that. It's surprising.
It really is amazing. It really is surprising. And to me, you know, I mean, I understand a little bit about websites and news sites because a lot of them now you have to pay for if you want your news. Although, like I said before to you, I think paying for news is a very smart thing to do because then you know the news is true and you don't have to go through all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you also have people who are, you know, people who aren't watching TV as much. They're cutting the cord. They're really relying a lot on social media. So you're right. I mean, there's a lot of people using it, but they're not using it necessarily correctly.
Back with our social media expert, our weekly visit with Scott Kleinberg. Scott, let's talk about Facebook and Reuters working together to do something about all this misinformation on social media. What are they doing?
Well, and I just want to say, I don't think it is necessarily directly tied to the survey that we just talked about, but basically Reuters and Facebook are working together where Reuters is going to build slash enhance a team to help fight misinformation on Facebook. So basically a team devoted to verifying content posted on Facebook and Instagram to let people know where something on Facebook is false or misleading.
Isn't everyone doing that? Aren't a lot of organizations doing this, or they've tried to do this?
Yeah. A lot of organizations have, some with Facebook, some without. And in a lot of cases, it sounds really, really great in the beginning. It's, you know, it's a big name news organization taking this on. In some cases, there have been actual flags on Facebook that have said verified or checked or something like that to let people know. But yeah, it's not that this is a brand new thing. It's just that maybe this is something being done at the right time when we need it the most.
So sounds like you're not confident this is going to work.
You know me very, very well. I mean, I think any collaboration is a really good collaboration because the ultimate goal is to stop the spread of misinformation. It's just what happens all the time is that Facebook considers itself one entity and it considers the news organization another entity. And the only way for something like this to work, in my humble opinion, is the news organization has to have autonomy to be able to say, this needs to go and this needs to go and this needs to stay. But what happens is you have the news organization, whether it's Reuters or anybody else, pushing back against Facebook's rules to say, we want to take this down. And Facebook saying, well, you can't take that down because that's free speech. And as we know from, you know, our work, you know, there's a difference between, you know, true free speech and what's responsible free speech. And those things tend to get blurred with Facebook. And I think that that's where, I mean, I think this is going to help at least a little bit. I just don't think it's going to be the answer we're looking for.
So what has to happen and how could anybody possibly keep up with all of this?
Well, what has to happen is, like I'm saying, what Facebook has to say, you have free reign. You can do this and we'll stay out of the way. Facebook says all the time that it's a tech company, not a media company. A lot of people, myself included, 5, 6, 7 years ago, basically said that when Facebook started handling news or being a big messenger in terms of news, that they changed into a media company, but they don't want to agree with that. And there's a huge difference between tech and media. They have to work together. They're just not working that well. As far as what we can do about it, see, that's the problem. There's almost 2 billion people using Facebook. I don't think it's gotten that. It's like 1.8 billion people. The minute someone shares something, I mean, it's almost instantaneous when this stuff goes viral. So unless it's caught at the source really, really quickly before it goes online, that's the problem. And that, I understand, that takes away from the growth greatness to Facebook, where you post what you're thinking, you share it with your friends, and you have a conversation. That's how the whole thing started. That's how it was supposed to be. But because it's not used that way, it's almost weaponized in another, you know, another way of thinking of it. And that's what's causing so many problems with so many people. And that's why we're in the situation we're in.
The news and information is coming at us so fast that no one could possibly keep up as far as trying to police this. It's impossible.
No, there's no way. I mean, maybe years ago, there was some way to actually do that. But now, no. Now, the only thing that you could literally do is post something and basically wait for that to be verified. But if that happened, that would take away from the beauty and the speed of what social media is. So it's being caught in the middle in like the worst possible way.
Do you fact check? Is that something you are available to do?
Oh my gosh. I mean, if someone really came to me and said, is this true? I would happily fact check it for them. I mean, before I share anything, I always make sure that, you know, it's true, or I make sure I let people know what the difference is between what this is and what they may have read. But if someone came to me and said, is this true? Can you help me find out? I would absolutely do that for them.
I want to ask you about Snopes, because I use Snopes.com and actually I was thinking the other day, well, wait a minute, am I trusting them too much?
You know, the thing is, that's a really good question. In this day and age, it's almost better to trust Snopes too much than to not trust them at all. Because in general, from what I've seen, they are very, very, not only very, very good, they're very, very transparent. They'll tell you right away if something is verified, if they're confident. You know, it's like you have a really, really good idea when you go there. It didn't always used to be that way. But now that people are relying on it so much for what we have going on in this whole news world, I think people rely on it a lot more, and for good reason. I go there often.
So if you hear a rumor, you see a rumor, or you see something on social media that you're curious about, is it true? If you go to Snopes.com, more often than not, they'll have something on it, right?
Yes, it's true. And not only that, this is the part that I love about that question. If you go to Google and you type in what you're looking for into Google, most of the time, the number one thing that pops up, or number two, is the Snopes entry. So it's actually working together in terms of, yes, go to Snopes, find out whether or not it's true. But then, like I always say, don't just check one source, check two, check Google. And then if you go there and you see it there, it's almost like you're getting double bang for your buck.
Always good information from Scott Kleinberg, social media and engagement manager at Investment News. And you can find him everywhere, including at Scott Kleinberg. I appreciate
That's
it,
right.
Scott. Always good talking
Thanks,
to you.
Paul.
Talk to
always
you next
good talking
week.
To you.
And you too. 7:54 right now. And Andy Mazur is here for Dave Bennett today. Dave's on a basketball assignment
Correct.
For tonight. And you get to go on assignment to Arizona, you lucky dog.
Yeah,
here.
Someone's got to do it, right?
The spring training report, the headline from spring training, everybody's optimistic at Sox camp. And over at the Cubs camp, Tom Ricketts addressed the troops. And everybody's talking about money and luxury taxes and so forth. So the question is, will they trade Chris Bryant or not? I know he's saying all the right things, but what's going to happen there, do you think?
Yeah, it's sounding more and more like he'll be around, to me.
Really?
I mean, that's
so?
Just kind of how I feel about it right now. I mean, the later you get into the spring training, the harder it is probably to deal because, you know, you're not dealing from a position of strength at this point. You're basically trying to shed payroll at that point. And, you know, trying to get something for somebody who you may not re-sign in a couple of years now with that grievance that was overturned that didn't go through, meaning he's the free agent now after 2021 rather than after this year. So they may be willing to ride it out this year and see if they can trade him in the offseason. Who knows? If it depends on what happens the first part of their season, they could be ready to deal them at the trade deadline too.
All I know is, and this is true for the Sox as well, you get off to a good start, you have a little winning streak, all of these problems disappear magically, don't they?
They do, and you know they talk about not being able to win a championship in April, but you can certainly lose one in April if you don't get off to a good start.
Yeah, and let's see, Sox are on the radio here Saturday, right?
Saturday afternoon, right? The White Sox and the Angels. Mike Trout and company will be at Glendale. They'll be at Camelback Ranch, and we'll have it right here for you. 2:05 is the first pitch.
You know, there's nothing like when winter drags on here, listening to baseball and just hearing the sound of it.
I know.
Doesn't it make you feel good?
It's so good. Bat on ball, ball hitting the mitt, just all that kind of stuff. It's so pure, and you love it. When you go out there, and when you go out to a game or you go out to Arizona, it's the same sound.
We ought to just get about 30 seconds of those sounds recorded here and then play them back like tomorrow morning.
Okay.
When the temperature here is, what's it going to be? Tomorrow it's going to be 24 for the high tomorrow. Mm. So that'll be the day to play that back. All right, Dean Richards coming up with his entertainment report after the 8 o'clock news. And what's this? The Price is Right has halted production? Oh, no. And Movie Phone is bankrupt. Dean will talk about that. And also a new Jimmy Carter rock and roll documentary. That's all coming on your radio right here. Time to check in with Dean Richards, find out what's going on entertainment-wise. Well, this is the headline. Price is Right halts production. What?
I know. How's that for a good tease?
What happened?
Did I interest you in that story?
Yes.
It's actually for a very sad reason. The show has halted production for, they're saying right now it's going to be about a week, because the host, Drew Carey's former fiance, was found killed at her home in the Hollywood Hills over the weekend. Since then, an ex-boyfriend of hers has been arrested in that. But Drew Carey is said to be just completely overcome with grief, and they've shut production down on the show until he's in a little better shape. But he did have a statement about the death of Amy Harwick, was her name. She was a very well-known Hollywood family therapist, and he said that people would be lucky to have the kind of love that he and Harwick shared. They were engaged for about a year before they split up in 2018, but obviously still a lot of love and affection for her from Drew Carey.
This was a relationship Drew Carey was in quite some time ago, wasn't it?
Yeah. This was, they ended the relationship 2 years ago. And they were engaged for about a year. So, you know, I would guess they were probably together for about maybe a year before that. So, yeah, it was something that went on. And just, you know, sometimes things don't work out. Things happen. They called off the engagement. But his affection for her never dwindled.
On to some concert news now. And Ozzy Osbourne and his health. He's got Parkinson's, doesn't he?
He does have Parkinson's. And over the last year, has had quite a few things go on. He's had pneumonia a couple of times. He's fallen in his home. He's had a pretty tough year. And Ozzy Osbourne yesterday canceled his entire North American tour for 2020 until they get things resolved. He's getting treatment in another country, and they're not saying exactly what the treatment is for. They're only saying that it's for various health reasons. He did not have any shows here in the Chicago area, but nearby to the north, to the west, to the south, but not specifically here in the Chicago area. But what Ozzy said yesterday was that because people have been holding tickets for shows in North America that have been rescheduled, in some cases several times, when he's had to cancel, he just decided to cancel the whole thing right now, get it resolved, get healthy, and then hopefully, you know, get back on the road again. He's not that old. He's only 71.
But he's done a lot of hard living, hasn't he?
I was standing but 4 feet away from him when he sang Take Me Out to the Ball Game at Wrigley Field.
Uh-huh.
That was a day that I will never forget. We were following him around, you know, with our cameras. And we happened to be up there when everybody saw how he did Take Me Out to the Ball Game. Shaka Khan was the only one that called him and said, "Hey, great job."
What was Ozzy like when you were with him?
He was very nice, but he was, you know, he was just sort of on another level.
Oh, yeah, another planet.
Yeah, uh-huh. Sharon was with him and was, you know, kind of his grounding force. He was extremely dependent on Sharon. And when you talked to him, he was very nice and he was very funny, but you couldn't help but feel he was not exactly in, physically in the same place that you were.
Yeah, of
while,
course.
While you were doing that. He was very, but very, very pleasant. So I wish him nothing but the best now. He was always very nice, and hopefully he gets all these things worked out.
Hopefully. We'll get to Adele, movie phone, and more with Dean Richards after a quick information break here. And Dean Richards has a Game of Thrones tidbit. Dean?
A Game of Thrones tidbit?
Yeah, isn't this guy a Game of Thrones guy with the coloring book?
Jason Momoa.
Yeah.
Jason Momoa, yes. See, because I think of him as pure Aquaman now. He got his, really kind of his claim to fame was from Game of Thrones. But, everybody thinks of him as dripping wet in Aquaman.
I missed that.
He was it the Grammys or the Golden Globes? He was there with his wife, Lisa Bonet. And apparently it was chilly in the auditorium, and he took his sport coat off, or tuxedo jacket, as any gentleman would, gave it to his wife to put over her shoulders. And he was wearing a tank top underneath, showing off his muscles. Who doesn't do that at the Golden Globes?
Everyone.
That's how I think of the Jason Momoa these days.
Okay.
And, if you, like me, can't get enough of Jason Momoa, now there's even another way. Something that is called Jason Momoa, A Coloring Book of Fantasies. It's a Jason Momoa coloring book that you can order from Amazon. 35 scenes featuring Aquaman sipping on tea on his front porch, shirtless, meditating, shirtless, writing a letter, shirtless, walking dogs, shirtless, paddleboarding and taking a bath. All shirtless, of course, because who would take a bath with their shirt on unless you're Aquaman? So that's available on Amazon right now. And good news, there will be coloring books featuring Keanu Reeves, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and Idris Elba. I have called the publisher of this, Bob, to see if we can get a Bob Surratt coloring book.
No, you don't want that.
All involved in Bob Surratt drinking tea.
These are for adults only, right?
Sleeping.
Sleeping.
Yeah. I shouldn't buy these for my granddaughter.
Having a hot dog.
Bob Surratt watching the Munsters.
I'm surprised Matthew McConaughey doesn't have a coloring book with him shirtless.
Yeah, boy, that's the truth.
Driving cars.
He's made his career shirtless. That's true.
All right, let's get to Adele and what's new with her.
Adele officiated a wedding for a friend this past weekend, and at the wedding, she's talking with the guests of the wedding. She happens to mention that you can expect my new album in September. This is the first time that we got any information whatsoever about new music from Adele. It's been 5 years since her last album. It doesn't seem that long ago. But good news. We have it from Adele from this wedding. You know, if it just wasn't the wedding cake talking, that this is going to be coming out. But check this out. At this wedding, they start the music, and of course, I'm sure they did the chicken dance and hokey pokey and all the usual. But also, Adele does a set of like 5 or 6 songs, including her own song, Rolling in the Deep. But how about that? You go to a wedding and you get a little mini concert from Adele. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's even better than Stanley Paul. My goodness.
Oh, come on. Nothing's better than Stanley Paul.
I was looking up at the monitors earlier this morning, Dean, and I saw you on Channel 9. And this clip of a movie, a documentary with Jimmy Carter and some music people look tremendous.
This looks so cool. It's called Jimmy Carter, the Rock and Roll President. And I remember that he would occasionally have rock and roll stars, as just about all the presidents do. They come to the White House once in a while. But this documentary, and I've only seen the trailer for it. I haven't seen the whole film. But all of these artists, Garth Brooks, Diana Ross, Willie Nelson, Bono, the list goes on and on of people who have said what a significant part of Jimmy Carter added to music and to culture and to pop culture. The documentary is going to premiere be the first film. It'll debut at the Tribeca Film Festival in New York on April the 15th this year. So we're going to look forward to this one. It sounds great. It sounds really interesting. Dolly Parton. The list goes on and on of people who are praising the 39th president and all he did for music and, promoting music and what it meant. Garth Brooks, particularly poignant in talking about how music is part of our souls and that Jimmy Carter appreciated it and promoted it, says something special about Jimmy Carter and the man that he was. All of that I ascertained from the trailer of the film. So we'll all look forward to seeing it in April.
Yeah, for sure. And finally, there's a story about Movie Phone. What happened to them? I guess the internet happened to them, right?
Yeah. Remember when you wanted to go to a movie back in the day? You would open up the newspaper and look at the, remember the other like pages and pages of movie listings,
sure,
of what was playing in your neighborhood, and you'd pick something out. And then suddenly there was Movie Phone, where you could call up this phone line, and the guy would tell you which movies are, give you a little description of the movies, and tell you which movies are playing in your area and at what time. And it was super popular for a while. It was a multi-million dollar company for a while. Sadly, the other day, and you're right, now you can just pick up your phone and in 2 seconds find out, your phone will tell you what's playing in your neighborhood. They have gone bankrupt. And the company now has, when it once had hundreds of employees, now has exactly one employee in their office. And that's, they say that this guy is not the guy on the phone line anymore. It's like sort of one person to keep an eye on their belongings, really. It's a really a sad story for something that at one time just seemed so cutting edge. And, I was thinking about it, and it's like, how will Movie Phone be best remembered? And this came to mind.
Hello, and welcome to Movie Phone, brought to you by the New York Times and Hot 97. Coming to theaters this Friday, Kevin Bacon, Susan Sarandon. You've got to get me over that mountain! Now!
Famous Seinfeld episode.
Kramer
from 1995, when Kramer got a new phone number and it was very similar to Movie Phones, and people were accidentally calling him, so he decided to open up the newspaper and just provide them with the same service. Classic, classic episode. But for a lot of people, that's how you're going to remember Movie Phone and what was left of this once thriving industry.
Yeah, didn't Brandmeier always talk to the Movie Phone guy?
Yes,
remember that?
Yeah, he sure did. You talk to the real Movie Phone.
Yeah, that's it.
Right.
And you mentioning that you've only seen the trailer for the Jimmy Carter documentary reminds me of an idea I had the other day. Tell me if you think this has legs, Dean. I thought I'd be the trailer guy, and my bit would be, I never see the movie. I do a review based only on the trailer, and then I give you a worth seeing or avoid just based on the trailer. And the reason, the genesis of this idea is, I'm never wrong when I see a movie after I've seen the trailer, and if I think based on the trailer that I was going to really like it, I do. And if I think I don't think so, I'm always disappointed. I'm never wrong after seeing the trailer. What do you think about that?
I love that idea.
Yeah. I mean, you can still review the movie, but I'll just review the trailer.
Hey, if you're gonna review the trailer, why should I spend 2 hours watching a movie? If you're gonna do it in 2.5 minutes, that's a genius. How much time I would save?
Well, some of these trailers are getting so long. I mean, they show you. Don't you think they show you too much of the movie sometimes?
Yes, they do. There's too many spoilers in it. You know what surprises me is when I see the trailer, and then I see the movie. And then I, when I'm watching the movie and, when I'm done, it's like, wait a minute, there were things in the trailer which were not in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
They clearly cut the trailer before they finished the final version of the movie, and they took things out. And it's like, you're putting things in there that were not part of the movie. That seems a little cheating.
Yeah, and as you know, though, it's the marketing departments of the studios that right. that and based on focus groups, they put those things together, and oftentimes the trailer is different depending on what movie it's playing with. Right,
right. You know, I think the best the most recent example of this is that Will Ferrell, Julia Louis-Dreyfus movie Downhill that opened last Friday. From the trailer, you think it's a comedy. They sort of cut it to make it look like here's Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Will Ferrell doing what they do best. And it's not a comedy at all. It, you know, it's a very kind of moody, you know, dramedy is even a little bit too much. There's a few laughs in it, but not very many. But they definitely cut the trailer trying to lure in Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Will Ferrell comedy fans for that movie.
Yeah.
But don't give up on your idea, though, because I think it's a fantastic. Every dope in the world is reviewing movies now. Nobody is just reviewing the trailers.
That's the promotional message the commercial will do. It'll say that. Every dope in the world is reviewing movies, but Bob Surratt reviews the trailer.
Right. All right. Thank you. We live in a fast-paced world now. Who has time?
Thank you, Dean. Talk to you tomorrow.
Why don't you just tell me the name of the movie you selected?
Talking about movies with Dean Richards, I just saw this and was kind of surprised. The big movie, Sonic the Hedgehog, sounded like a movie not high on my list to see, but it brought in an estimated $70 million over the President's Day weekend. That's the Jim Carrey movie. Jim Carrey and James Marsden, alongside the animated blue speedster Sonic, telling the tale of an extraterrestrial hedgehog who joined forces with a small-town sheriff trying to avoid the schemings of an evil genius. It didn't sound like something I wanted to see, but apparently most people did over the long weekend.
There weren't many other choices, really.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah,
they released it at a good time, Paramount.
Yeah, and everybody's seen most of the Academy Award movies, and I haven't, and they took them all away last weekend, and I wanted to still see some.
Well,
so
the idea was you're supposed to go pay your money and see them before the Academy Awards. That's why they do the Oscars at the slow winter time of year for movies. Although now you just see it at home. See them all at home on your TV set.
That's what I'm going to have to do.
And Taylor Swift's father fought a burglar who broke into his $4 million Florida penthouse. The Tampa Bay Times said that Scott Swift returned to his home in St. Petersburg, and he returned moments after a 30-year-old man used an emergency escape stairwell to climb 13 floors to enter. The men fought before the suspect ran away, according to the paper. He has a lengthy arrest record that includes domestic violence, and Taylor Swift's father picked the man out of a photo lineup. And let's see here, he was being held on $50,000 bond. Taylor Swift was not with her father. Unclear whether the intruder targeted the home or not. The Taylor Swift lives elsewhere. And I was watching the Johnny Carson show the other night. Do you ever see that on Antenna TV, owned by this company? It's great seeing Johnny Carson, but I'll tell you, this is funny. I hit guide, you know, on my remote to just check out who Johnny's guests were, and then the first thing it said was repeat, and I'm thinking, really, this is a rerun? I thought it was a new one. But it should say, and maybe the grand high exalted mystic ruler of the company who's here can make this change on the guide for Antenna TV. When you see Johnny Carson in the description, if it still says repeat after that, it should say, duh. Well, it's fun to watch those shows. It really is. And the monologues are like time capsules of the news of that day. Although it is depressing to see your parade of people who have passed away, I must say, including Johnny and Ed. Bob Surratt with Andy Mazur at the sports desk today for Dave Ennett. Let's say good morning to Troy Murray from your WGN Blackhawks broadcast team, sponsored by ChevyDriveChicago.com. Catching up on your sleep, Troy?
Yeah, I'm finally trying to figure out what time zone I'm in.
Yeah. All right, here's what I want to know before I turn things over to Andy. Are the Hawks going to trade Corey Crawford?
Oh, gee. I don't know. Are they?
Well, we keep hearing rumors about this, and the question how much are the Hawks going to be sellers, and then Crawford's contract. What's the deal with that? What do you think?
Well, Bob, you know, I mean, there's a couple things that are happening right now. I mean, the Blackhawks aren't in the position that they would hope to be. There's still a week to go, a couple games in between here. Rangers Wednesday, Nashville on Friday. Before the trade deadline on Monday, both Corey Crawford and Robin Leonard's contracts are up this summer. There's a lot of speculation about what Stan Bowman will be doing. But, you know, as Stan says as well, he says, you know what, speaking in the hypotheticals really don't do us any justice right now. You know, that last road trip with the Blackhawks run was a tough one. Where they lost 4 to 5 games, kind of puts them in a different situation, different light of where they were a week ago with some, you know, optimism going into that trip. They're not out of it by any means, and Stan's going to have to make that decision. But there's always a possibility, just because of both contracts are expiring for the goaltenders, that, you know, if Robin Leonard, who has said he's not going to take any kind of a discount, you know, is he the long-term solution, or do they re-sign Corey Crawford? Those are decisions that Stan are going to have to make, but the rumors are flying out there because they're both unrestricted free agents at the end of the season.
Charlie, good morning, and welcome back to Chicago. And I know,
hi,
Bill, how are you doing there? You know, you mentioned the tough road trip, and obviously, you know, when you only win 1 of the 5 games, that's what it's classified as. But you, as an analyst watching this game, as you do, did you notice some things, especially from the younger guys, that can be a positive at least going forward here in the short term and in the long term?
Well, there's lots of positive. There's no question that there's lots of positive. You know, you look at Kirby Dach, is only 19 years of age. I mean, he's getting better and better. And this is a tough league to play in. And he's a big kid, but it's a learning experience for him. I think that you're seeing a lot more maturity out of Big Kirby. When you look at Boquist, who's going to be the mainstay on defense, he had a rough game in Calgary, but that happens. And again, he's only 19 years of age. It's a grueling schedule. The Blackhawks just played 5 and 8 days all on the road. The travel, everything that's involved, you kind of get worn down a little bit. So he didn't play in that game against Winnipeg. But at the same time, the upside for Boquist is tremendous. He's gaining experience. So, you know, even though you are disappointed with what happened on the last road trip, you know, the future looks great with some of these young players who will be the core moving forward.
Now, the other thing about that trip, too, it's not like they played poorly in any of the games. There was a penalty issue in one game. There was the comeback by the Jets in that first game. But again, they were in it, and especially the Vancouver game, there was absolutely zero luck, but then they took it all out on Calgary. They still stayed tough. They still stayed in all these games, didn't they?
Yeah, there was each game, and this is what happens. Each game in the NHL takes a life of its own. If you look at the first game against Winnipeg, played a great first period. They were up 2-0, but a strong pushback from Winnipeg. So the consistency for 60 minutes wasn't there. In Edmonton, the opposite happened. Not a great start. You battle hard. Too little, too late is how Jeremy put it. Moving forward into that game against Vancouver, maybe their best 60-minute effort of the season. The goaltender for Vancouver, Markstrom, was amazing in that game. First time in franchise history, and it's the 50th year for the Vancouver Canucks in the NHL. First time in history that a goaltender had 49 saves in a shutout for Vancouver. So something very special happened that night on the night that they retired the Sedins jerseys to the rafters. So now you've got really nothing out of the first three games. You've had inconsistency and then a dominating 60 minutes. Moving into Calgary, puck started to go into the net. They scored 8 goals, which was a season high. And then they competed hard in that game against Winnipeg. As the standings look right now, if you look at all of these teams, is Calgary in a playoff spot, Vancouver, Edmonton, Winnipeg. You look at all these teams that they played on this road trip. Are they significantly better than the Blackhawks? No. Did they win those games? Yes, and that's the important, that's the bottom line of everything. But the Blackhawks are right there. If they can find some consistency in their game, you can move forward. You have to go on a real big run here. There's no question about that. But at the same time, you saw some real good things happen on the road trip. You saw some things that need to get better on the road trip.
Yeah, and that's been the mark of the team right this year. I mean, it's been inconsistent. You see one stretch where they're playing lights out and winning everything that they every time they go on the ice, and then you see games like they had in Vancouver where they're just not getting it done and not being able to score.
That's Andy, the frustrating part of this whole equation, I believe, for everybody. When you see how well and how hard they can play and how hard they can work. In that game against Vancouver, you say, well, gee, it's there. It's within us. We can give that 60-minute effort if we have the focus. But all season long, as you mentioned, ups and downs, highs and lows, the inconsistency is what has been frustrating, I think, Stan. I think it's what's been frustrating Jeremy, because you see some really positive things, and then you take a step back. And I know it's a long progress and everything, but, you would like to see that consistency, especially when you see it in a game like Calgary, when you see it in a game against Vancouver, who is one of the better teams in the West now, made a significant trade actually yesterday. So they're right there. So if they can get that consistency together, nobody's going to play great all season long, and that goes for a team and that goes for an individual. But you want to see both of those kind of get to a point a little bit higher where they are right now, where individually there's more consistency in some of the players this year, and as a team, more consistency in a lot of areas.
Here's what I want to ask Troy Murray. A lot of people don't know Troy worked for a while as a trader at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. So, Troy, how about some tax tips? This is the season,
Well, I don't know if you want to ask a trader tax tips. I was down there at the Merc for 7 years, I loved it. I loved the atmosphere down there. It's very competitive. There's a lot of similarities actually to trading in the pit on the floor to competitive sports. And a lot of people who were down there were college athletes, good athletes in their day in whatever sport they were. There's a competitiveness that you have in the pits, to get trades, to find trades, to execute the trades. That's very similar to the focus and what you need to do as far as an athlete. So I think they kind of went hand in hand. I enjoyed what I was doing down there, but as the Blackhawks are telling me this year, this is my 20th season as a broadcaster in one way, shape, or form with the team. So probably something I didn't see coming out of retirement, that I was going to be a broadcaster for this long, but certainly enjoyed my 7 years down at the Merc as a trader.
How about a stock tip then?
Mattress. Put it in the mattress.
There you go. Words of wisdom from Troy Murray. Always good catching up with you, Troy, and let's hope for a late winning streak here.
Yeah, thanks, Bob and Andy, for having me on, and let's go Hawks.
See you, Troy.
Good idea. Well, they're playing me off. That means it's time for John Williams. What's on your mind today, John?
Is that... playing off or playing off?
It's
been
like
asked to leave a plane because you were punching the seat in front of you?
No. It's like the award show playoff. But, yeah, that guy who hit the seat back is, not famous, infamous, isn't he?
I haven't addressed it on my show yet, but we are going to spend a little time on it today. There's three players, right? There's the guy in the front, or the back, the lady in the front, and the airline. I said on Facebook, tell me, what's the one unassailable truth? What's the one thing we've learned from this? To me, the airline is the bad guy in this story.
There's no room on the plane anymore for you.
And people are crazy. And so if you create a situation where you put crazy people in a tin can and put it up in the sky, bad things are going to happen. Yes. That's my unassailable truth. Final answer, show to begin shortly.
There you go. Thanks for listening. We will see you tomorrow.